vaccinate kids, especially potentially kids less than 12 years of age.
And we just have 10 seconds, but there's now this discussion of booster shots after 8 months or a year in the United States, when so many countries in the world don't even have access to any vaccines. Your comment?
I think it's premature to talk about booster shots until we truly know what the duration of the immunity is in the United States. And we may potentially get cases down so low that just routine public health measures could take care of it. So a little premature to talk about booster shots.
Well, Dr. Ali Khan, I want to thank you so much for being with us, epidemiologist and dean of the College of Public Health at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, former director of the CDC's Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response, author of The Next Pandemic: On the Front Lines Against Humankind's Gravest Dangers. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of
KBOO
our
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Wednesday. Stay tuned for Wednesday Talk Radio with your host, Paul Roland, coming up.
Hold your head up. Lift the top of your mind. Put your eyes on the earth. Lift your heart. Yeah.
tell by the skin of our teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful.
And good morning, everybody. This is KBOO, and I am Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm talking at you live out of my, home studio, although it's just a little corner of my upstairs space where my fixed landline is. In any case, I'm glad to be able to talk to you. Boy, I love Buffy St. Marie. I actually listened to that entire album a few days ago, Medicine Songs, which came out, five, six, seven years. Anyway, it's just a powerful, powerful album, the whole thing. It's really, really worth listening to. She redoes a handful of her old songs from back in the day, back in the 60s, when she started out as one of the very, very few Native American, originally from Canada, but she ended up in Boston. And one of the very few Native American singer-songwriters on the circuit, hung out in Greenwich Village with all the luminaries, made a name for herself, and ended up with a multi-decade career and still going strong and still putting out, still writing some of the most cogent songs that I know of. Anyway, Medicine Songs, Buffy St. Marie. That's Carry It On. Boy, those lyrics are powerful, and do we need them ever? Mother Nature is the source of all protection. Well, yes, that's true. Unfortunately, we've seriously messed with Mother Nature, and Mother Nature is not happy, if one can speak anthropomorphically. We're certainly not happy about the effects of our cumulative actions over the decades and centuries that have led to the stunning, stunning heat wave that is now about to envelop Portland, Oregon, the entire Northwest, and even east of here, even hotter than what it is predicted to be, although it's unclear whether we will actually reach, I mean, some people are even talking about 115 degrees, something crazy like that. I mean, is this possible? I guess sort of the lower end is in the lower hundreds, which is crazy enough since it's supposed to last for several days, which is quite unprecedented for June. I mean, it has on a handful of occasions gone over 100 degrees in June, but generally doesn't last. Anyway, so we're going to continue the discussion we had last week of heat waves and climate change. I'd kind of like to stick to that subject, please, when you call our number, 503-231-8187, I'd appreciate if you could do that. But, if you have some really urgent, pressing issues that need the public's attention, I'm certainly willing to entertain that. You can talk to our board operator, Sonia, who will be just asking you a quick question about what it is that you want to talk about, so that, try to keep on topic the best we can. But, as I said, Sonia will hear you out, and if she thinks that the topic is of public importance, then she'll put you through. So that's the way it works here on my talk radio show. And, of course, we have other talk radio shows the other days, mornings of the week, mostly. I think Thursday is somewhat, I'm not sure what's happening with that right now, but we do have talk radio the other days of the week. I'm Paul Rowland, and I'm on Wednesday mornings from 8 to 9. So I'm going to read a little bit from some articles, as I often do. Okay, so are we all on the same page? I honestly think that we don't really have a good common understand about what's actually happening, the pace at which it's happening, its causes, all these things. Unfortunately, that's just the nature of social reality, where we're all the way from, you know, people thinking that, you know, we could have near-term human extinction within the next, several years, based upon runaway climate change, to blithely denying that we actually have any kind of problem, and everywhere in between. So, without its atmosphere, Earth would be a chilly place. Sunlight would illuminate the planet each day, and then much of its energy would leak right back to space, leaving the planet with an average surface temperature of around 0 degrees Fahrenheit. That's without an atmosphere. Fortunately for us, Earth has what's called a greenhouse atmosphere, with gases like carbon dioxide, water vapor, methane, and others that trap heat that is radiated up from the surface. Much like a greenhouse collects light and turns it into heat so plants can thrive, Earth's atmosphere acts as a blanket, holding in heat from the sun so it doesn't escape back into space. Quote, the greenhouse effect makes our planet habitable, says Graham Stevens, director of the Center for Climate Sciences of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. The climate is just right on Earth because of its atmosphere. Now I'm reading from a NASA Global Climate Change Vital Signs of the Planet article by Lori Schmidt from March 22 of 2018. Part of what makes Earth just right is the interplay between temperature, water vapor, and heat in the form of infrared radiation. When Earth's surface gets hotter, more evaporation occurs, which releases water vapor into the atmosphere. Quote, water vapor is a greenhouse gas. When more of it is in the air, it traps even more heat and radiates it back down to the surface. That extra infrared heat evaporates more water vapor, which traps more heat, which then in turn evaporates even more water vapor, and so on. It becomes a feedback loop. Now, I'm not going to go on from this because it's talking about the potential for a super greenhouse effect in the Earth's tropics, but I just sort of wanted to give you a quick sketch of what the basic scenario. Of course, now the problem is that with industrial civilization, we've been adding, I mean, to some extent, even before that, with deforestation and other human impacts on the environment, we have affected the Earth's climate, but really the large impact has been since industrial civilization started burning fossil fuels, first coal, then oil and gas, and they release CO2, and a lot of them also release methane in the process, especially from with incidental releases from like fracking operations, where massive amounts of methane are just off-gassed directly in the environment, and then methane breaks down fairly rapidly into CO2 in the atmosphere. So we are basically accelerating the greenhouse effect, and we've been doing that for centuries, especially since post-World War II, with the vast expansion of industrial activity. Of course, the war, military are always the accelerator for technological change and innovations, et cetera, and for the use of these materials for the war machine. And then that sort of goes into the civilian economy and, products like plastic, various gases, et cetera, have been accelerated in the especially since the mid-20th century, and more and more products, more and more productive activity, the internal combustion engine cars, the acceleration of artificial fertilizers, the so-called green revolution in agriculture, massive expansion, the massive expansion of mass agriculture, the massive expansion of industrial farming, industrial meat farming, huge feedlots, increased methane production, increased the use of fossil fuels, the mechanization of agriculture, et cetera, the massive expansion of the built environment, freeways, concrete, asphalt, et cetera, is all adding. Concrete itself is a huge accelerator of global warming, and massive amounts of CO2 used in the production of concrete, cement. About a fifth of, at least in the United States, of global greenhouse gases actually come from private houses, heating and cooling, and of course that leads to other feedback loops. So here's another article from Quartz. Actually, let me go to this. I got two computers going. So this is an article from MSN.com. When smothering heat and humidity overtake the cool of spring, a familiar quest for relief begins, usually a trek to the basement or attic to dig out the window unit that's been dormant all winter, or flipping on the central air. It brings welcome, sometimes life-saving cool. Now, I will just full disclosure, I did go into a closet just yesterday and dug out a one of those mobile air conditioner units. I personally can't stand air conditioning. I understand there's people who have various conditions, including just age, who need air conditioning. I don't begrudge them that at all. In fact, I have a 92-year-old mother who I, actually my new housemate installed this mobile air conditioning unit into her window for this coming weekend. I will do with a fan myself. I don't even use a fan. I'll probably use a fan in the upcoming days, but I'm a fairly strong, physically healthy person who doesn't have those sorts of issues. So now, to continue with this article from MSN.com, the flipping on the air conditioner to deal with the heat, this is also a growing contributor to the already perilous climate problem. In a New England's heat wave early this month, 5 days of 90-degree plus heat, the longest June heat wave in nearly a century, peak electricity demand from air conditioning put 36 million extra pounds of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. That's 3,551 cars driving for a year, or 18 million pounds of coal burned. The eye-popping numbers are not necessarily unexpected, but they highlight an alarming phenomenon at work as climate change makes periods of extreme heat more common and prolonged. The warming climate is leading us into a dangerous, vicious cycle. Quote, climate change is driving more and hotter heat waves, which is forcing us to use our air conditioner units more, which is driving up emissions and causing more climate change, and so on and so forth, perpetuating itself, said Joseph Daniel, senior energy analyst with the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. As long as the electric grid powering those air conditioners draws from predominantly fossil fuels, it's a trend that will continue. The state is working to cover the grid with more renewable energy, but even under a best case scenario, expected to take decades to completely transform it. So that's one aspect, you know, the terrible reality that most of the things that we do to respond to these urgent, immediate situations only accelerate the process. So we're trapped in these strange, vicious cycles that I'm sure don't make any of us necessarily feel any better. So I think the tendency to shut it out and continue in our air-conditioned bubble is very strong. I recall the book Air Conditioned Nightmare by Henry Miller, great book, by the way, which really kind of you know, somewhat of a problematic figure, but a brilliant writer, and that was a mid-century response to these mid-century developments that were going on. There were some really precocious people. Of course, we've known about the greenhouse phenomenon for, I believe, well over a century at this point, and the knowledge only gets even more precise, such that climate models are more and more exact, although, of course, the climate deniers will throw shade on even that and try to introduce an element of doubt and skepticism into that. But as I will read from the next article, as I look to see if anybody has called in already at 503-231-8187 to see if they want to join the conversation. Well, so we got Anissa. Well, let's just go, Anissa. Let's go to Anissa before I read from this article on the climate models. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi there. Yes, I've been thinking about this for quite a long time and wondering what all the older people and people with respiratory conditions are going to do when the grid goes down for a couple of days or a couple of weeks when we don't have any air conditioning. I am an elder. I'm in my late 60s, and I've been living without air conditioning most of my life, including in my car.
And you've been in Portland?
Well, I've been in San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco for numbers and numbers of years in each town. Now I've been in Portland for 20 years.
No, I was going to say, because Portland, you can, as I said, if you're in decent health, you can generally afford to live without an air conditioner. San Diego and Los Angeles, I applaud your tenacity, but yeah. It's...
I was younger in San Diego. I was in my 20s, and I had a wonderful time, and I don't even remember needing air conditioning. Quite frankly, I enjoyed going into grocery stores where they had air conditioning. It was a nice frigid change from the weather, but I loved the heat back then. That was the 70s. But now, because of all the things that have gone on, aside from being worried about the polar bears losing any way to walk on solid ice, and all that's going on in Africa with the elephants, and what's going on in the oceans with the whales, and that those five gyres of garbage that are swirling around, I'm just wondering what all these older humans are going to do when the grid goes down for 2 days or 2 weeks, or maybe longer, and no air conditioning.
Swamp. Well, yeah, I mean, you bring up a whole series of questions. I mean, there's the immediate individual question of individual people and what to do about them, which is equally important to everything else. Then there's the question of what do we do about the grid itself, which is vulnerable to these, going to be increasingly vulnerable, given that we're most likely with these increasing heat waves going to be stressing the grid more and more. I saw that Texas had another brief episode after the big freeze earlier this year caused a total shutdown of their grid, and they had another smaller shutdown, and that's going to happen. They've had, of course, rolling blackouts in California. They're going to have that sort of thing. You know, it's just going to be more increasing. So obviously, you know, that's what supposedly the Green New Deal, Biden's infrastructure plan is part of it, is dealing with reinforcing the grids and upgrading them, and you know, and as well as transitioning to other forms of energy production, which in the long term could obviate, but in the short and medium term we've got some serious problems. So yeah, we just don't have a social system that's designed to help, you know, fairly large numbers of people who are going to be in distress in scenarios like that. So you know, the kind of social networks that are available just may not cut it. I mean, I'm worried about the houseless people in the next few days. I tried to look online for information on cooling centers, which I know have opened up, but I actually couldn't find anything in a fairly cursory, but, you know, so I don't know if anyone has any information about cooling centers for people.
There's
I think a lot of
cooling centers that are advertised for elders to come in, but guess what? When the cooling center, the cooling centers are operated by electricity, aren't they?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the vulnerability is in the Northwest to possible, you know, grid shutdowns. That's a good question. I'm not going to say that it's a likely scenario, but I don't actually know. So we'll put that out there to our listeners if anyone knows. I think we shouldn't raise the alarm of, you know, possible grid shutdowns, at least here in the Northwest, unless we know more about it. But, you know, a lot of places, that's a serious issue.
The thing is that I've been watching these people called preppers for quite a while. And a year ago, I lost a very important friend of mine. He moved, and he wouldn't even see me before he moved. He was getting out of town. He said, Anissa, you can buy 5 acres of land for $5,000. I just did it in Colorado, and I'm going off-grid. Portland.
Well, good for you. That's obviously not an option for everybody.
That's not me. That's a friend of mine. I lost
it
because, no more, unless I want to go to Colorado and find out how to get in touch with him and live with him off-grid. No, I'm here in Portland. I'm older. I'm almost 70, and I'm going to have to deal with the heat, too. But there are people who are older than me that are just so weak, and I don't know what they're going to do. And, you know, people are going to be dropping like flies. I know it. But the thing is to be prepared. What I've got is a bunch of flashlights around the house and some more high-powered battery lights. And I've got a battery-operated little spray bottle that has a fan on it. So you spray your face, and the fan cools you off by AA batteries. So that's one thing I've done. But I'll listen to the rest of your show, and I'm glad that you're talking about this.
Well, thank you for calling in, Anissa. And that's I like that suggestion, the fan with the spray, water spray. That's a good thing. That's not an air conditioner, which, you know, the problem I have is that people who really don't need air conditioning massively use it. Our society is just geared towards massive use of everything, and there's really no overall strategy to, you know, prioritize and to, you know, people are free to pump as much water out of the ground as they want, to pump as much oil out of the ground as they want, to drive as much as they want, and et cetera, et cetera. And people who are in serious, you know, need often don't get what they need. So let's go to Robbie, who has some information on energy grid production, consumption, and climate disruption, apparently. Go ahead, Robbie.
Oh, I have. This has been a topic that I've researched and has been highly fascinating to me, because I do believe there is a very large fossil fuel conspiracy going on. You know, I don't even think it's much of a theory. There's, you know, I mean, if you there's like a wonderful documentary about how GM in the early 50s went to like every local municipality and, you know, local chapter and state governments and immediately started pushing back against public transportation. So you have these industries that thrive on the power grid, the power consumption. And we have the same industries that have been controlling us. For instance, it's literally illegal to have a property in most counties off-grid. You have to have at least one structure connected to the grid, the power grid. So this is like a forced monopoly. And then on top, so you have to have it hooked up to the grid, but the grid is only owned by one corporation, you know, or maybe three if you're, you know, lucky up here in the Pacific. But regardless, you know, they all kind of work in the same stuff. I worked on a farm that was, I guess, semi-off-grid. We had to have the one structure hooked up to the power grid, and it was funny. It was the worst structure in the whole farm, that was where I slept, the chicken coop was solar powered and fully, you know, heated up and everything. It was more advanced than where I was staying. But the reason why this is such a large, why I just, the technology exists. And the thing with the Biden infrastructure plan and the reason why solar, like for the past 15, 20 years of my life, I've been saying solar power is not more expensive. Sure, lithium ion mines, they're bad, right? But here's the thing. You don't need to do just lithium. Like that's, there's like the farm that I was at, we were using old car batteries. Do you know how many of those exist around? You know, you go to a junkyard, we pulled 12 to I think 15 car batteries and then had four solar panels, and it powered the entire farm. It charged enough for being able to, you know, power it through the cloudy days. We had overpowered. And the thing is we're told, like for the, you know, people that I'm trying to communicate this to, it's like, oh, well, solar power and, you know, wind, it's not feasible. And the thing is they are, but it's just not affordable because it's not being sold to us. And it's not being sold to us in a, you know, in this, you know, consumer-based capitalist world, you know, so it never will be, really. But what we're watching right now is, oh, okay, we have to address the climate change. So this dragged-foot neoliberal response, you know, all government responses, you know, we have the Paris Climate Accord where there was Shell, literally there's people on the climate Paris Accord, whatever that thing is, that's nothing. There's people who work for the fossil fuel industry who have been caught in like meetings joking about how they're like running certain groups in there. So the thing is these industries are controlling every way in which we're going to be going towards this more renewable path, and they want that. They don't want the renewable aspect to affect their profit. And so this is why it's so critical. Why I'm trying to like why I think we should kind of, I don't know, the law of thermodynamics, I think there's easily ways to not break, but you're able to add rules to physics and you can get to near point zero energy output. It's been done. Harvard, I think, hosts a yearly competition for finding a perpetual motion machine amongst college kids. And almost every year there's been three or five different kids who've like won it. They've won it. They've won making a perpetual motion device almost entirely with magnets. All of those require magnets, but what I'm getting at is I don't know if I'm going all over the place here.
The problem is that sure, there's so many different solutions and people throw out solutions all the time here. And the problem is, you know, overcoming the obstacles towards instituting any particular solution you have. And that's the, you know, you talk about the conspiracy, and that's, it's the conspiracy is basically capitalism, the capitalist system, which, you know, wants to maintain the power and profit in the hands of few people and wants to shut out the kind of decentralized, democratic diffusion of smaller scale technologies and solutions that would actually, you know, would already have made a huge dent. But of course, that's not the model that we're running on. So scavenging a bunch of car batteries is a great idea on an individual basis, but that's not gonna what I talked about last week, you know, when I was talking about this subject, is the problem is this thing is coming at us so gosh darn fast. I don't think we understand how fast. You know, this is one example is, you know, possibly 100 plus degrees, 105, 107, whatever it's going to be, 102 for several days is really strange. But it reached 118 in the Siberian Arctic in the last few days. You know, this thing is a train barreling down on us really, really fast. So the kinds of, you know, it determines the kind of solutions that are actually going to have any kind of impact. I think we really need to really turn our minds on that. And, you know, it might be, you know, I hate to say it, it might be that there's not a darn thing we can do about it, you know, but we do need to listen to the scientists who are increasingly, you know, calling the alarm of a of rapid climate change. And, you know, 100 plus degrees in late June is one example of a rapid climate change. So I applaud everything you're saying. I don't say don't go in that direction, but, you know, I'm, you know, we, you know, we had a demonstration at Chase Bank a few weeks ago. You know, it was a good demonstration, but, you know, we need, you know, I can't suggest illegal acts on the air, but, you know, Occupy was a really good thing. You know, occupying financial institutions might be, you know, something that might be, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's possible, but I, you know, I'll give you the last word, Robbie, and then invite other people to call in at 503-231-8187.
No, I mean, for the most part, it is, it's out of our control. You know, I mean, we can use less napkins all we want, but the fact that the you know, they're still providing the napkins and not forcing us to use, you know, paper towels. The caller earlier saying from San Diego, you know, she hadn't really noticed. See, I'm from Arizona. They used to make houses without, you know, HVAC or whatever that was, you know, centralized air conditioning. And so they would design these adobe houses. And in San Diego, it's very similar. It's a very similar architecture. And what they would do is they would design these houses to, you know, have airflow. So you don't need that. What happened, you know, sometimes in the 90s, 80s, late 80s, is, you know, everywhere it turned into swamp coolers and ACs. And then they just started quit, you know, they started doing these cookie cut houses across it. But I think if we can all understand, right? I mean, there's the solution is not going to, we're going to have to do, what we have to do is damage control. We have to figure out how to take care of the people that are going to be suffering from all these consequences. But I think if we could have this perception that we are being duped through the energy process, this monopolized grid, we are being force-fed all this stuff, and that these technologies, GEET technology, G-E-E-T technology, is stuff that's being suppressed. And I think if we had that mindset, we would be putting the pressure onto this infrastructure, but we don't pay attention. We don't know that stuff. So, I mean, that's kind of where I feel. It's like, that's why I feel like Chicken Little. I'm like, you know, the sky's falling, but, you know, these energies, it's the technology's out there and it's not being given to us. So,
okay. Well, thank you, Robbie. Always good to hear from you. Looks like we got another caller, Chris, and you, after Chris, you can be the next one to call up at 503-231-8187. I would like to kind of get to a couple other articles, but I know everybody's got lots to say on this subject. The heat wave is coming to us strong. What are you doing to prepare for it? What are you thinking about it? How are you feeling about it? Let's see what Chris has to say. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Paul. Thank you. Good show. I always like your show. I'm just going to deal with it like any impoverished person and try to. I don't have any air conditioning, so it's going to be 110 on Sunday, and I have to work, take the bus. So it's going to be great fun for me. But I was kind of, you know, wondering what the people that own the state of Oregon are going to do, like, say, Phil Knight. You know, he's the richest guy in Oregon. And I wish
I think
I could
he's
going to
keep putting out the high-priced shoes in his factories, personally. But, you know,
yeah, well, I bet he's got air conditioning, and
he's got a big old mansion with central air for sure, no doubt about it. Anyway,
yeah, well, they own the. They own the state. They own the politicians. They own the grid. I'm laughing at you guys talking about the grid. The grid. What do you mean the grid? It's not your grid. It's owned by corporations. They decide what you know the grid is going to be. You know, whether it's going to be reliable, whether it's going to be powered with fossil fuels. There was a case in Arizona where the corporate the utilities killed a bill that would have that was proposed to get Arizona off fossil fuels, their utility to become solar powered and everything. You know, Arizona gets enough sunlight to power the whole country with solar power. And you know what? You know how much solar power Arizona gets? This is so laughable. 6% of their energy comes from solar power, and they're in a desert, like 360 days a year of sun. Imagine that. Now, doesn't that tell you what the priorities of your society are right there? There is no intention for these corporations, for the owners of this country, the corporations, no intention whatsoever to stop climate change. Just based on that ridiculous state of affairs, that the sunniest places in the country will not even use solar power, that they're in the pockets of the fossil fuel companies.
Right. So well, that's laughable. That's why, you know, unless there's a massive movement to disrupt their power, obviously nothing's going to change, and that's about all there is to it.
But is it? It's not even a priority on KABU. I mean, you know, it's like begging. This whole speaking truth to power, begging corporations. People don't realize a corporation has one goal in life, and that's profit. That's it. You can't beg them into doing something good. You've got to get rid of them, or at least control them, you know, completely.
Well, I'm willing to entertain your ideas for doing that. I mean, I do think we do have to, you know, I think calling attention to the dire state of affairs is a good first step. But, you know, I don't want to just wringing our hands and tearing our hair is probably not going to do a lot of good. So, yeah, I mean, I think I respect, you know, a lot of the people in the climate movement who have been, you know, doing really good work in shutting down export terminals and, actually there's been some move to actually have financial institutions withdraw from funding fossil fuel projects. These things are all good. Obviously, they're not enough, but, you know, no one's got the answer. There is no mass movement along the lines of, you know, completely shifting away from profit-oriented self-destruction. So, yeah, I mean...
That is the answer, isn't it? But that is the answer, right?
Totally.
Don't you think? Well, then there, what do you mean? Then you just said there's... Well, that's the answer then. You've got it right there, so you act on it. I mean, you just...
Right, but how do we do it together in this very... fractionized social situation that we have, in which there's, you know, not even general agreement on that issue, you know. So yeah, I think that KABU should talk more about what do we really need to do, what are the central contradictions that we're faced with. Yeah, I think we do need to do more of that for sure, and I'd like to see it, and I try to do it as much as I can. But looks like we got another caller. Give you one last thought, if you want.
Well, no, that's okay. Go ahead and do the next caller.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling, Chris. We got David up. Go ahead, David.
Hi. Good morning. Sorry, I just got into my car. My phone just switched over to my stereo, so I'm hands-free. How are you this morning? Thanks for talking about this important subject, because quite honestly, in my own mind, there really isn't anything more important than our Earth health and the health of everything in it. I wanted to talk about the article that you were citing earlier this morning from NASA regarding the acceleration of heating effect from water vapor, because, you know, as you said, it's a positive feedback loop. And according to the data out there from a website that I go to called guymcpherson.com, there's actually over 60 identified positive feedback loops currently active. But tailing off of that article, there was another article that published earlier this week or yesterday from Nature Conservancy that is a study, it's a release study that identifies the aerosol masking effect. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Not many people are, because it's typically not talked about in the public.
Well, sure, yeah. It's the fact that industrial processes, in addition to releasing all these greenhouse gases that are superheating the atmosphere, also produce a lot of particulates, which have the effect of blocking some of the sunlight and sort of hiding the actual potential for global warming if they weren't there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I'm glad to hear somebody else out there knows about this. And what this study basically says is, and you can link to the article by going to guymcpherson.com if you want to take a look at it. Basically what this article says is that according to the most recent satellite studies, measuring the aerosol, measuring cloud cloud cover and its impact on the aerosol masking effect is that they've actually underestimated the effect of it by the effect of it was previously estimated at 40%, and it's actually 55 now. So it's actually considerably higher than what people were previously stating. And for those of you, and for those folks out there in radio land who don't know what the aerosol masking effect is, basically what you just described, is that the positive loop result of effect of that is any decrease in industrial production that of 20% or greater will automatically trigger a 1 degree rise in temperatures within a few months. That's the estimate. So we're kind of in a catch 22. It's kind of like, well, if we keep going the way we're going and do absolutely nothing, the effects of climate change are going to take, you know, a little bit longer. But if we stop doing what we're doing and we decide to go with our industrial production reductions, then it's just going to speed up the end result. And neither one of them are positive.
So Guy McPherson basically decided that it's too far gone, and so basically, you know, he talks a lot about, you know, just living out your life, you know, enjoying your life, and he's not really involved in the kind of social struggle that I personally still, you know, I guess I would rather go down fighting myself. I'm not saying he's you know, I'm not saying he would be against any of that. But he seems to believe that it's definitely too late for the kind of massive changes that are necessary, which may well be true. But still, I think, I don't know, it just sticks in my craw not to keep fighting the bastards down to the, you know, our final last breath, I guess.
No, I agree with you, and I think that Guy McPherson actually would agree with that also. You know, that his message is basically live a life of meaning and purpose, you know, and that's going to be different, and that's going to be different for everybody. I mean, what I'm saying I'm not suggesting that we should all just throw our hands up in the air and just, you know, and just walk away and just give up. I don't mean that. I don't suggest that by any stretch. But you know, but I think the more people understand the true reality of what we're facing, there's going to be that sense of urgency to fight back and do something.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, so
I don't really have
anything else to contribute. I just wanted to tail off of your article from earlier from NASA. I think that was a good report from them. I just wanted to point to this secondary article that kind of feeds off that information and expands on it some. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. There's a few people out there. Guy McPherson is one. Kevin Hester is another. Nature Bats Last has been calling the attention to truly rapid accelerating climate change, which, you know, actually I think more and more, you know, the climate models are coming to. The problem with the climate models is they are only as good as, you know, the people putting in, you know, the framework that they're built upon. And so if they leave out certain of these, you know, Guy McPherson identified 60 positive feedback loops. Now, positive feedback loops may sound good, but it's not. It's like the melting of this Arctic sea ice, which means that it's no longer reflecting solar radiation back to the atmosphere, but the dark blue ocean is absorbing more heat. It's true for glaciers. It's the stressing of forests so that they're no longer absorbing carbon dioxide, and they don't act as carbon sinks as much as they did. It's the fact that, you know, the permafrost melts and releases large amounts of methane. These are all positive feedbacks. Positive just means it increases in the direction in which it's already going, as opposed to a negative feedback loop, which is kind of a break on the dynamic. So There's a lot of these going on. So we're basically into non-linear territory here, which is sort of parallel to the non-linear economic system and productive system that, and population growth and, you know, non-linear growth that is the nature of our current economic model, and it tends to produce non-linear effects in the natural world, which sort of grew up evolutionarily on in very, very different processes that didn't include industrialization and massive expansion of the human footprint on the planet. So I could continue to talk. 503-231-8187. We're really going quickly through this program. We're already at 8:50. So if you do want to get your call in, get it now. So an article from Quartz: the U.S. hasn't seen anything quite like this. Over the weekend, temperatures soared to new triple-digit heights across the American West. The immediate cause was a heat dome, a massive high-pressure air trapping heat beneath it, one far stronger and larger than normal. But what we saw this weekend was what climate scientists have been predicting for decades, and it's a taste of what's to come. Quote, "It's surreal to see your models become real life," Catherine Hayhoe, a climate scientist and chief scientist at the Nature Conservancy, says in The Guardian. Records fell across the region. On June 17th, California's capital of Sacramento hit 110 degrees Fahrenheit, smashing the last record of 102 degrees set in 1976. Similar all-time highs fell in Las Vegas, Denver, Phoenix, and other cities thousands of miles apart. In Death Valley National Park, where temperatures soared to 128 degrees Fahrenheit, just 1 degree off the record, nighttime temperatures stayed above 111 degrees Fahrenheit, well past midnight, among the hottest nights ever recorded in North America. And that's the kind of thing, amongst everything else, that worries me. Portland is known for having hot days, but generally speaking, lowering to relatively low temperatures at night, which brings relief and, you know, doesn't allow the heat to continue to build up and build up and build up and build up, because you're getting that relief at night. It also allows relief to animals, plants, and human beings. We are, of course, animals. So that's a concern to me. It's hard to argue with climate models. What climate models predicted is coming true. Scientists forecast global warming would fuel higher temperatures, falling humidity, dwindling snowpack, and intensifying drought. So far, this is coming to pass, despite some uncertainty about how this will play out in the coming century. Extreme heat waves are now an estimated 3 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit warmer across the U.S., estimates Michael Wenner, a senior scientist at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. In the West, the hottest days have gotten about 33% drier in Nevada and California over the last 40 years, according to the University of California, Los Angeles climate scientist Karen McKinnon. A, quote, "mega drought now engulfing the region is eclipsing any period for the last 1,200 years. Little of this is surprising for scientists who run supercomputers modeling the planet's atmosphere. In 2019, climate scientist Zeke Hausfather analyzed 17 climate models run between 1970 and 2007 and found more than half predicted outcomes, quote, indistinguishable from what actually occurred. I think that's probably pretty good for scientific models. More than 80% correctly analyzed how the atmosphere would respond to rising greenhouse gases level after controlling for models that overestimated humans' greenhouse gas emissions. The West's drought appears to be without precedent in recorded history. From Oregon to the Mexican border, drought intensity has reached exceptional levels. Drought, decades of low rainfall, and two especially dry years have turned the region into a tinderbox, with 100 million dead trees in California alone, and millions more ready to burn. With the hottest and driest period of the year still ahead, conditions are, quote, as bad as they can be, says Daniel Swain, a climate scientist at UCLA. Last year, similar but not as dry conditions led to an apocalyptic fire season that killed 33, burned 44% of the state, 4.4 million acres, and left the entire coast languishing under blood-red skies. Fires are breaking out again in California more than a month early. Also here in Oregon, as we know, Warm Springs once again is burning. Those poor Warm Springers who have an abysmally poor water system, just a scandalous situation, and now unfortunately they have a large forest fire burning on the northern part of the reservation. Anyway, again, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We only have just about 5 minutes left. I'm reading from a recent article a couple days ago, or yesterday, whenever it was, in Quartz. That's QZ.com, talking about the unprecedented nature of the situation we are in. I'm concerned. I'm very concerned. I'm worried. I'm scared, frankly. And I think we all should be, but I think we should all talk about it more and understand it, because, you know, anyway, for me, understanding actually helps me. I think if you only understand it a little, you may be more prone to worry. If you understand it more and actually take action, action is the best antidote to despair. There are groups working on these issues. Much as I might disagree with what I consider not as incisive an analysis or action program that most of them have, but they are doing something, and if you join them and have a more incisive perspective, then maybe you can influence them to do more. I think we need to get all the organizations together. We need to talk about this more. KBOO definitely needs to talk about it a whole lot more. In addition to everything else, this is, you know, I do have an intersectional analysis. This is not separate from the abysmal situation of housing that we have in the city and just about everywhere. Again, another symptom of a vicious capitalist system. The problem of a police abuse and the police protection of wealthy people over poor people and people of color. Any issue you want to bring up is connected. It's a systemic issue, but we still don't have a good, strong, common understanding of the nature of the system that is creating such chaos and devastation and madness, frankly. I've actually been reading a lot of some old mid-century authors. I think actually kind of in some ways the late 60s, early 70s in some ways was kind of the fruition of that, those trains of thought, incorporating feminist and decolonial and people of color perspectives more than before. People like Eric Fromm really set out some really powerful frameworks for understanding the nature of the situation. I'm reading Beyond the Chains of Illusion right now, My Encounter with Marx and Freud. Quote, a brilliant evaluation of Karl Marx and Sigmund Freud, the intellectual giants who exert such a profound influence on modern thought. Anyway, I find it very, very stimulating. I don't know if people are still doing, book groups with the pandemic. I hope we come out of this sooner rather than later so we can start getting together again in person and having more impassionate discussions. I joined the Democratic Socialists of America and was going to their general meetings and found them very stimulating. I don't know if they're now meeting in person again. I know they've been meeting online. I personally don't do much of that, just not up to it technically and not really oriented that way, but I appreciate the people who have been doing that. I really appreciate the people who have kept KBOO on the air. I kind of have it easy as a talk show host. All I do is, as I said, talk on the landline. So I really do appreciate all the technically adept people who have been keeping the station running. This is a crucial community resource. Definitely appreciate everybody who's supported KBOO during our recent spring membership drive. Hope we get back to our old in-person, on-the-phone membership drives But yeah, it's going to be grim this weekend. I hope we don't get as hot as the higher estimates. Gosh, 115 degrees, can you imagine? I hope people drink a lot of water. I hope people have access to water. I hope people help people out who don't have access to water. I hope people help the elders out who check in on them. If you have neighbors who may not have the air conditioning resources, bring them things that they need. We need to support each other through these coming week, which is looking like it might be a very difficult one for us here. We are getting a taste of the Southwest, which we are not used to. All right. Well, I've got a program page at kboo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm going to throw in a bunch of these articles I've talked about and some others, so you can have some references if you're interested. That's about all I got to say. Thank you, Sonia, for running the board. And have a good rest of your day. Stay tuned to KBOO. Bye-bye.
This is KBOO Portland.
Want an impactful way to volunteer for KBOO? Believe in KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change? Then apply to be a member of the KBOO Board of Directors. Our KBOO Board guides our